I didn't just love my mom. I liked her. And though she was only genetically obligated to love me, I'm pretty sure she liked me too.
Maybe you remind him of your mom, and he's trying to move on, Theo says, which is sweet, him defending my dad.
Maybe, I say, even though I don't think that's quite true either. My mom and I looked nothing alike, were nothing alike. She was brave and big-mouthed, more like Scarlet than like me. And she used to joke that she wouldn't have believed I was hers, we were physical opposites in all ways, if she hadn't seen me come out herself. I don't remind my dad of my mom. I know that. But for the first time, I wonder if he wouldn't switch us too. Me for my mother. Given the chance.
You and Ethan are friends, right?
Theo asks, seemingly apropos of nothing, and yet I'm happy for the change of topic. I don't want to think about my parents, about how little control we have over our own lives. Yeah, I guess, sort of. I don't know, I say.
I saw you eating lunch together.
We're partners in English, the wasteland thingy.
Right. It's just that, and not to get all big brother on you.
I'm pretty sure I'm older, I say.
Whatever. Just be careful with him. I'm not trying to throw shade or anything, but I get the sense that he's trouble.
In a Taylor Swift way, or like for real? Damaged was the word Dree used, which makes him sound like a defective iPhone.
I don't know. It could just be rumors. But I think he could be into some heavy shit, like his brother.
What do you mean? Like drugs? Ethan's brother must be older and out of the house. He's never mentioned him. Funny how having no brothers or sisters myself and no aunts and uncles, both of my parents were only children, I always forget about other people's. It just seems so unnatural to me. The idea of a family being more than three, shaped in a way that is not a triangle. Though come to think of it, mine is now 2D. A line.
Yep.
I don't think Ethan's on drugs. Of course, I have no basis for defending him. I don't know what he does or even where he goes. 3 times this week alone, I've seen him leaving campus before lunch, coming back just in time for English. He arrives dazed and withdrawn, but then again, he always seems dazed and withdrawn. And on stage, he looked altogether unfamiliar, like someone who could easily spend his days and nights shooting up.
I hope you're right. He always looks pretty rough, though, and his family is just so screwed up. You have no idea.
I'm so tired of the Wood Valley learning curve, I say, wondering how different it would be, how different I would be, if I'd grown up here with these people, had known their families and histories and awkward phases as well as I know my own. It's so inefficient playing catch-up.
I'm just saying be careful, that's all,
Theo says. I think of Ethan's eyes, the pockets of shiny purple underneath, the swelling of his lids, the bright blue center. And I wonder if I'm capable of being careful. Because I think of those eyes, open and looking at me, closed and asleep at Jem's party. I think of his hands fixing me a plate, almost touching my banged-up face. And all I can think about is how much I want to kiss them. His eyes, his hands, too. All of him. His damaged parts. All of him.
Chapter 25. Me. French fries or potato chips?
SN. Easy. FF any day of the week. Ketchup or salsa?
Me. Ketchup.
Harry Potter.
The movies or the books?
SN. You're not gonna like my answer, but honestly, the movies.
Me.
Seriously?
SN. I know. You're never supposed to admit to liking the movie better than the book, but come on. Two words. Emma Watson. Starbucks or Coffee Bean?
Me. Starbucks.
SN. Me too.
Me. Star Wars or Star Trek?
SN. Neither.
Me. Smiley face.
Me too.
When I come home to find Rachel in my room, I remember that this is not my room at all. This is Rachel's guest room, and my sleeping here confirms what I already know. I am merely an interloper. I glance around, wondering if I left my laptop open. I don't need her to see my IMs with SN, or God forbid, my Google history, which has way too many questions that begin with, "Is it normal to..." Phew, my cover is closed, tattoos visible even from the door. No, nothing for her to see here. Bras and thongs away in the drawers, the dirty ones in the wicker box Gloria has considerately provided. My tampons, too, are hidden. Even my toothbrush is tucked into the bathroom cabinet, banished, along with all of my makeup, so that Rachel's counters remain empty, except for her self-congratulatory soaps. "Oh, hey," she says, pretending she wasn't just looking at the only thing I have on display, the photo of my mom and me. "I was waiting for you."
"Okay," I say, cool, but not impolite.
I am mad at my dad, which by extension may now include Rachel, but I don't know how these step-parent things work. My parents were usually a single unit, had very little patience for me playing one off the other. Usually, if I was mad at one, I was mad at both. But Rachel is still a stranger. Her vows to my father have done little to change that. "Your dad says you're not talking to him," she says, and sits down on my bed, or her bed, or whatever. She is sitting where I sleep, and I would prefer she didn't. "I'm not sure that's any of your business," I say, and then instantly regret it. Recent circumstances with my dad notwithstanding, I don't do confrontation. When someone bumps into me in the hallway, my reflex is to say sorry. But maybe I'm not sorry. Who is she to get involved in this? I didn't marry her.
"You're right. That's between your dad and you. I just wanted to give you this."
"Well, we wanted to give it to you, but your dad thought since it was my idea, I should be the one. Just here." Rachel hands me a folded piece of paper. "What is it?" I ask, wondering if it's an eviction letter or something. A quick glance makes clear it's not a check. Damn, that could have been useful. "Open it," she says, and so I do. A flight itinerary. LAX to Ord for next weekend. Round trip.
"I don't understand."
"We thought you might want to go home for a visit. See Scarlett. Hang out with your old friends for a few days." "I heard you were homesick," she says, and she picks up the photo. A conscious decision to look at my mom and me, and to let me know she's looking. She examines our details, how I held on to my mom's leg like an anchor. Or maybe Rachel is not looking at me at all, but is trying to get a sense of my mother, of her husband's first wife. I want her to put it down. I don't like how her fingers are leaving tiny smudges. "Who said that I was homesick?" I ask, which is a stupid question. Of course I'm homesick, the longing sometimes so overwhelming that I've even marveled at how accurate the word is, how the feeling comes over me like the stomach flu, violent, unforgiving, no cure, just waiting for it to relent. "Scarlett's parents called your dad," Rachel says, and finally puts down my photo. It takes all my willpower not to move it so it's facing the bed, not the door, to wipe the glass clean with some Windex, erase her fingerprints, reclaim it as mine. But how could you not be? This has been a huge adjustment for all of us.
Is that regret flickering across her face? Does she wish she never married my father? That there was an easy way to undo their joint mistake?
Wait, what? Scarlett's parents called my dad? Did they tell him about my plans for their basement? What did Scarlett tell them? I'm not sure if I should be angry or thrilled, because right now I have in my hand a plane ticket, an actual plane ticket that will take me from here to home, to Scarlett and to a life that's familiar, in under 6 hours, door to door. We didn't fly out here when we moved. Instead, Dad and I caravaned our 2 cars through too many states. The world flat and devoid of life. Miles upon miles of nothing but dust. The occasional stop at McDonald's to eat and pee. A gas station to refill. A cheap motel to sleep. My mind as blank and empty as the roads. As numb as SN feels playing Xbox. We barely talked, my dad and I, on the trip. He might have tried. I don't know. Only once did Rachel come up, over lunch at an Arby's, as if he were answering a question I hadn't even asked.
Rachel's an extraordinary woman. You'll see. Don't worry, you'll see,
he said, though I hadn't said I was worried. I hadn't said anything at all.
Apparently Scarlett's mom said she was concerned about you. And frankly, so am I, Rachel says now. Go. Enjoy. And then come back to us refreshed. Your dad has... well, he saved my life. He's totally real and normal and understands what I've been through, and I couldn't be more grateful for that. We're so different, but together we're stronger. Whole. But I don't want you to think that I don't realize that this, all of this, has come at a cost to you.
She's matter of fact. Her voice a normal decibel for once. Everyone in this house understands how hard it can be to start over, she says. I look at my ticket. I leave Friday morning, get back Sunday night. What about school?
Theo will email you notes and stuff, and we'll let your teachers know it's an excused absence.
You deserve this.
Rachel pats the bed next to her, invites me to sit. I've been pacing, I realize now, mid-step, on my second lap around the room. I sit, stare at the ticket. Coffee with SN slash Caleb on Thursday. His mask unveiled, I hope. And then I'm off. I'll miss my weekly wasteland meeting with Ethan, but he'll understand. Scarlett and I will watch bad television and pop microwave popcorn and eat real pizza, not this whole wheat crust crap they have in California. I will talk, and she will listen, and there will be no need to explain everything or have anything explained. We've known each other too long for all of that. I even want to drink that green tea her mom always brews, the one I used to think tasted like pee, but that now makes me think of home.
Thank you, I say, and force myself to look Rachel in the eye. My dad didn't do this, I realize. Big gestures are not his style, or at least they weren't before he married Rachel. And a plane ticket was never something that could be so casually purchased. My eyes water, and I stare straight ahead to get the tears under control. Not here. Not now. The tears only seem to come when they are least wanted, almost never in the quiet depths of night, when the emptiness is so real it feels like a phantom limb. When tears would actually feel something like relief.
No problem, Rachel says and stands up.
But just so you know, there is one condition. I wait for it. What could she possibly want from me? Rent money? For me to make up with my dad?
You have to come back.
Me. OMG, OMG, OMG. Two sleeps.
Scarlet. Woot woot.
Me. What did you tell your parents? Obvi, they freaked.
Scarlet. They were talking about turning the basement into a gym. I said maybe they should wait to see if you were moving back, and they were all like, what?
Me. Whatever. I'm coming home. I'm coming home.
Scarlet. Cannot wait. BTW, you don't mind if we hang with Adam while you're here, do you? I had plans with him on Saturday, and...
Me. Sure. Yeah, of course.
Scarlet. Maybe I should host a welcome home party.
Me. You know, I'm not much of a party person.
Scarlet. Not a party. More like a get-together.
Me. Squee! I'm coming home.
Me. Guess what?
SN. Chicken butt.
Me.
Question mark?
SN. Sorry. What?
Me. I'm going home. For only 3 days, but still.
SN. Exclamation point. So happy for you. But.
Me.
But what?
SN. You are coming back, right?
Me. Smiley face.
SN.
Smiley faces are cryptic. Say, I am coming back.
Me. I am coming back. FWIW, I'm not sure why you care so much. It's not like we couldn't IM from Chicago.
SN. Not the same. And I like seeing you every day.
Me. You see me every day?
SN.
You give good face, Ms. Holmes.
Me.
Hey, need to reschedule Friday. Going home for the weekend.
Ethan.
Yet when we came back, late, from the hyacinth garden, your arms full and your hair wet, I could not speak, and my eyes failed. I was neither living nor dead, and I knew nothing. Looking into the heart of light, the silence.
Me. That's my favorite part. I get that. Not being able to speak. Not feeling alive or dead.
Ethan. Me too.
Me. Maybe if you slept more.
Ethan. Ha! You must be so psyched to go.
Me. I am. Beyond.
Ethan. Good. Eat a slice of deep dish pizza for me.
Me. Will do. Can we meet next week to make up the assignment?
Ethan. Of course. Monday after school?
Me. Sure. You'll probably have the whole thing memorized by then.
Ethan. Already do.
Would a drug addict take the time to memorize poetry? Theo has to be wrong. Ethan is not on drugs. Ethan is an insomniac and may be damaged, whatever that means. Except I do know what that means. Because who's kidding who? I am damaged, too.
Chapter 26. I can't eat lunch. Too nervous. In just a few hours, I'm meeting Caleb for our first date, though it's not really a date, and I'm not sure it can even be called a first, since we talk online all the time. Last night, we IM'd so late, I fell asleep with my computer on my lap and woke to his words dinging on my screen. Three things, he said. One, good morning. Two, I have keyboard marks on my face, slept on the SDFGH. Three, you leave in 24 hours, and I'm going to miss you.
I'm not buying that Caleb is SN, says Agnes
when I refuse her fries for the fifth time, on grounds that I'm worried I might throw up.
I mean, Dree is right. He's weird like that, but I don't know. He's not, you know, shy. He's like the most direct guy I've ever met.
But I told him where I worked, and then he showed up there. I totally saw him texting at Jem's party at the exact same time we were writing. And whenever I talk to him, he does this weird phone shake thing to say, like, I'll write you, and then a second later he always does. And he quoted me back to me. It has to be him, I say.
It's definitely him, Dree says.
and I'm impressed that you made the first move. Ballsy.
Dree is not looking at us. She's staring at Liam, who is sitting on the other side of the cafeteria, nowhere near Jem.
You think they broke up?
No idea, I say and shrug. Nor do I care.
You may have actually brought down Jem Eam.
Jem Eam?
Jem and Liam?
Jem Eam.
I roll my eyes at Dree.
I want to talk about Jasalib. I just feel like I would have heard if his sister had died,
Agnes says, and my stomach clenches.
You said he never really talked about her.
Dree multitasks. She talks to us and watches the Liam show at the same time. I'd worry about her being too obvious, except Liam is clueless. I just hope Jem won't notice. And there were rumors.
I mean, yeah, I had heard she was a total cutter, and she had a major eating disorder, so who knows? But I thought her parents sent her off to some mental hospital on the East Coast. Not that she, you know, offed herself or anything like that, Agnes says. Her tone is so casual, as if we're talking about a character in a book, and not someone's actual life. Whether a real person in the real world is alive or dead. It strikes me how callous we all are. How comfortable we are belittling other people's problems. Total cutter. Major eating disorder. So easy for us to say. I wish I had never mentioned his sister. Now I feel like I've betrayed Caleb. Spilled secrets that weren't mine to spill. I'm glad I've never said anything about his mom.
Maybe he meant it metaphorically, like it felt like his sister died, Dree offers. But I shake my head. Caleb wasn't at all vague. Or maybe he just said it to connect with you. You know, about your mom.
I take Agnes's French fry, nibble it slowly and deliberately. I will ask Caleb later if I have the nerve. I've never really wished anyone dead before, but it would be so not cool if he made the whole thing up. No, Caleb has lost someone close to him. We are a select crew, the Dead Family Club, and I think I can tell who is for real. He counts the days, you know, since, just like me. No one could make up counting days. In English, Jem takes her seat without looking at me. I just see her straight back, her ponytail swishing its disapproval, the side of her arched brow. Her beauty is so classic, so generally agreed upon, that it's almost impossible not to stare. I hate myself for it, but I long to look like her. To cast spells without even having to open my mouth. To have a body like hers, assembled from lean, proportionate parts, as if dreamed up and arranged by the fantasies of all the men. I wonder if Ethan is staring at her, too. If he can help it. If at night, Ethan thinks about Jem the way I think about him. I try not to. Think about him, I mean. I've tried to do a bait and switch. Put Caleb where Ethan's face appears, but it never works. I may spend my evenings IMing with Caleb, but I spend my dreams with Ethan. In them, he's awake, his hands eager, his eyes on mine. In them, I'm not scared of sex, of intimacy, of anything at all. In them, I don't feel ugly or compare my body to Jem's. I feel beautiful. And strong. And brave. In the morning, I wake up flushed, sad when the feeling gets wiped away by the reality of day. When I wash my face in the mirror, see whiteheads, red splotches, round baby cheeks.
Ms. Holmes, Mrs. Pollock asks, and I wonder how long she's been calling on me.
Yeah?
Care to answer the question?
I remember suddenly that she's been going around the room. I had ample warning, knew I was next up, but still I somehow got lost in thought.
I look up at Mrs. Pollock. She's attractive. Might have looked a lot like Jem when she was in high school. I bet she's never had a pimple. I'm sorry, The whole class looks over. Jem and Crystal snicker in duet, and my face flashes hot. A bead of sweat threatens to streak down my right temple. I flick it away, try to calm my beating heart. Back in Chicago, English was my strongest subject. I mean, I wasn't paying...
That scene with Raskolnikov at his house with his mother and sister, how he's able to act like everything is normal, even though he's actually going crazy inside.
Ethan breaks in, and though I have no idea what he's talking about, his comment satisfies Mrs. Pollock, who moves toward the front of the room to write something on the blackboard. Exactly, she says, giving me one last look, which catches me by surprise. Because it's not mean. It's not even pity. It's something else entirely. Empathy. Thanks, I say to Ethan after class, once we are safely in the hallway. You saved me.
My pleasure, Tuberlicious.
I hope I don't ruin your grade with our project. I fiddle with my bag, which feels too heavy on my shoulder. Especially after I kind of made you work with me.
I'm not worried.
He smiles, so I force myself to look him straight in the eye, to bathe in the blue. No, not like a serial killer's, like I first thought. More complex than that. Like a gathering. I hear Theo's warning in my head and check for dilated pupils, but they look normal size to me. Good, I say. Not clever, not flirtatious, not anything. Maybe in an hour I'll come up with a better line, something funny and light to punctuate my exit. But now? Nothing. Ethan rubs his head, as if trying to wake up his hair, smiles again.
Have a safe trip tomorrow.
Thanks.
Don't forget about us,
he says, and before I can even articulate a question. What does he mean by us? Wood Valley? L.A.? Him and me? Ethan is gone, out the front door and halfway to his car. I wait for Caleb near the school's entrance, stand idly by the stairs. He said we should meet at 3 o'clock, and now it's 3:15, and I pretend not to be nervous that he won't show. I stare at the screen of my phone as if I'm deep in thought, as if my life depends on this text I'm typing. But I'm not really texting anyone, because the person I normally write to at times like this is Caleb. So I'm just thumbing over and over with my fingers. Please don't stand me up. Please don't stand me up. Please don't stand me up. I wonder how long I'm supposed to wait, and at what point it will become obvious to me that I'm an idiot. Jem walks by, because, of course, if there must be a bystander to witness my humiliation, it will be her. For a moment, my stomach drops with the thought that SN may be Jem, that he has been a joke all along at my expense. But then I catch myself and let the thought go. No, Jem has better things to do than to text me late into the night as part of an elaborate practical joke. My friendship with SN is real, even if Caleb is not yet ready to face me. I wish you'd just go back to where you came from, Jem says as she skips down the stairs, words thrown over her shoulder, as sharp as darts. Me too. I say it low enough that she can't hear.
Me too what?
Caleb says, and now he's next to me, and I can't help but grin from ear to ear. He didn't stand me up. He's here, car keys dangling from his long fingers, ready to go. We will have coffee and finally talk, and it will be as easy as it is with my fast-moving thumbs. As strange as it is to trust him, I do. Three things I start writing in my head. One, you understand me. Two, tell me about Kilimanjaro. Three, were you scared up there? Nothing, I say, just talking to myself.
Do that often?
It's been known to happen, I say. Caleb is so tall that I need to look up to talk to him, my neck arched back at an unfortunate angle. Maybe later I'll take a selfie to see what I look like to him from way up there, the entire plane and slope of my face, all chin and eyebrows. It can't be pretty. I'm not Barbie to his human Ken doll.
Listen, about coffee,
he says, and the disappointment hits me full force, even before he says the words. This is what you get for being ballsy. Ridiculous of me to be so optimistic and open, to assume this was going to happen. I keep letting myself be lifted and dropped, like a stuffed animal in an old-fashioned claw machine. I'll never actually be chosen, especially by someone who looks like him.
I think we shouldn't.
Have coffee? Okay. I want to pick up my phone again. I am SN. Write what is too hard to say. Why not? Why aren't I good enough for you in person? I think of the whitehead on my chin, which I covered with makeup in the bathroom just a half hour ago. I think of my arms, flabby and pasty, not browned and toned like Jem's. My eyebrows, which no matter how long I spend in front of the mirror, always come out just slightly mismatched. My clothes, which are almost as nondescript as Caleb's, but girls, I guess, are not supposed to aim for nondescript. The width of my nose, which has never bothered me until right now. My chipped fingernail polish. Even my earlobes, too loose, like long-hanging fruit. And of course my forever disappointing chest, which somehow manages to be both small and floppy at the same time. Stupid, sad, flat funnels. Caleb will not see my disappointment. I mirror his casualness. Shrug, like it's no problem. Keep the smile from dripping down. Act like I don't feel the small, hard knot in my intestines, as if someone has reached into me and plucked them into a hideous bow. I grin through the pain, an actual, literal, visceral pain.
You know, because of Liam,
Caleb says, and now he's gone fuzzy and I don't understand at all. He's speaking a foreign language I've never heard before, one overly punctuated and aggressive. Nasty simply because of the sounds of its hard, cruel letters. Liam? I mean, wait, what?
I just think he'll get the wrong idea. And he's my best friend, so you know,
he says. But I don't know. What does Liam have to do with my getting coffee with Caleb? I'm confused. What wrong idea? What does Liam have to do with anything? Again, my brain is stalling. Maybe Caleb is right after all. Let's keep everything in words on a screen, where they are so much easier to let out, where they are clear and can be saved so they can be returned to later in case of a misunderstanding.
You know he broke up with Jem, right? Because of you?
Caleb's tone is so matter-of-fact, as if this is basic Wood Valley knowledge. And also, as if it has little to do with him. No. I didn't know they broke up. And if they did, I had nothing to do with it. I swallow. Start again. Hear that I sound defensive, though I don't know what about. I mean, she's a huge bitch, and maybe he saw that she's been, you know, so mean. So indirectly, I guess it could tangentially have to do with me, but wait, what? I'm rambling because I'm nervous. I stop. Let my brain play catch-up. He's not saying what I think he's saying, is he? No. Liam couldn't have broken up with Jem because he likes me? No. That's not possible. Oh, God. I finger the paper in my pocket. My ticket back to Chicago. Tomorrow cannot come soon enough. I need to get far, far away from this place. I think of Dree hearing this somehow, through that weird Wood Valley network I'm not at all clued into, and her thinking I've betrayed our new friendship.
She knows I have no interest in Liam, right? None of this makes sense. Jem is the kind of girl who makes men, not just boys, but men, do double takes. There is no universe in which someone would break up with her for me. Unless... Is Liam somehow SN? Do we have some sort of intellectual connection that would make him want to bridge that impossible gap between Jem and me? No. Liam's an only child. No dead sisters, real or otherwise, and it's not like we really connect when we talk in person. At least, I don't think so. Liam did tell me the other day at the store that I was easy to talk to and a really good listener. They seemed like throwaway words, the right thing to say to someone who is a little shy. Honestly, I am not that good a listener. I am just good at letting other people talk. No. Caleb must have the story wrong.
All right, whatever. But I can't get involved,
he says, and starts to walk away. Wait, I say, wanting to ask a million questions but realizing I should probably just IM him instead. More direct and efficient.
What?
Caleb looks back. He's shaking his stupid phone again, like that alone should satisfy me, the promise of a future message. Nothing. I say, just talking to myself. SN.
Excited for your trip?
Me. Cannot wait to get out of here. SN.
Day was that bad?
Me. I just... You know what? Never mind. SN.
Anything I can do?
Me. No. Not really. So I was wrong. It's not easier to write the words, to spell it out. You hurt my feelings today. I don't like Liam. My fingers are tired of this. It was just coffee. Or this. How can you like me so much in words and care so little for me in person? Or maybe even this, just to be 100% sure. You are Caleb, right? I lie back on my bed. It shouldn't be surprising that SN doesn't want to hang out in real life. Even before I stopped talking to him, my own dad barely wanted to speak to me. The self-pity creeps in, slow, stealthy, hungry, the monster under my bed. I try not to think of my mom, so handy in these moments as a cheap, easy trigger. A way to justify feeling sorry for myself. The loser with the dead mom. A shortcut that is as demeaning to her as it is to me. Dree.
OMG, OMG, OMG!
Me. Question mark.
Dree. I was right. Jem-Iam is so over.
Me. Wow. Cool.
Dree. Methinks this occasion deserves more enthusiasm. And get this. He broke up with her.
Me. Huh. Guess you figured out who she really is. She hasn't heard the second part yet. Maybe Caleb is wrong. Maybe I have nothing to do with anything. Maybe I misunderstood what he was saying. That would make a hell of a lot more sense. Either way, I'm not going to be the bearer of this ridiculous gossip, especially because I'm hoping it isn't true. A mere 2 months ago, when I was eating lunch by myself on that lonely bench, the idea of a senior, any senior, asking me out would have been not only inconceivable, but thrilling. More than just flattering, the stuff of my dork girl fantasies. He's the lead singer of the coolest band in school, after all. But now, Liam could screw up everything. My friendship with Dree, my job, maybe even things with Ethan, who always gets weird when Liam comes up in conversation. And, of course, Caleb, who now has found a convenient excuse to keep our relationship online only. This new Jesse, the California Jesse,
lives on unstable ground. I need Dree and SN and even Book Out Below. Dree worries about being invisible. My worry is its distant cousin, that without those three things that add up to my life out here, I might just disappear. Dree,
how was coffee?
Sorry it took me so long to ask. Was freaking over LNG. Me, didn't happen. He canceled. Dree,
so sorry.
You okay?
Me,
it is what it is.
Dree,
how very zen of you.
Me,
I am one with the universe, and the universe is one with me.
Dree,
screw him.
Me,
that too.
Chapter 27. My phone is turned off, tucked into the zippered pocket of my duffel bag, and though it's only been a few minutes, I miss it, have to fight the reflex to reach for the screen. Instead, I look out the window, watch as LA gets smaller and smaller, a collection of buildings and houses and cars on the freeway that from up here look harmless and neutral, like any other place in the world that isn't home. My PSAT prep book sits open on my lap, but I can't bring myself to read it. In T-minus 4 hours, Scarlett will pick me up from the airport and drive us straight to DeLucci's, and we will order 2 slices of pizza each and Diet Cokes in big frosted glasses, and all of our shared history, our lifetime of inside jokes, will come alive again across their dingy folding tables. My 2 months away, erased. I will tell her about the mess I've made of things, how my new life feels on the verge of unraveling, and she will tell me how to fix it, how to keep my friendship with Dree, how to make Caleb want to, you know, actually be with me in person, how not to lose my job, how to rid myself of my ridiculous unrequited crush on Ethan, who by all accounts is damaged and possibly dangerous, and also unattainable. And she'll remind me that everything that is new always feels tenuous, that a lot of this, maybe even most of this, is in my head. In T-minus 4 hours, I will be home again. Even though my mom won't be there, at least finally, I will be someplace I recognize. I'm so relieved that I let the tears fall now that there's no one here to see. I even let them blur the words on my vocab list, let them bleed their fat, wet stains onto the page. Later in the car, I sideways glance at Scar. She looks different, older somehow. Like her features have set. Her hair is short now, a messy, asymmetrical bob. She never mentioned she'd cut it. I wonder if she made a Pinterest board of options first, like we used to, or if it was a spur-of-the-moment decision. Either way, she rocks it. Scar taps the wheel of her parents' battered old Honda to the beat of some song I don't recognize. Both the music and the heat are blasting. My coat and scarf are necessary outside, but in the car, dressed for Chicago and with my seatbelt on, I'm overheating. I should have taken them off before I got in. I think of the weather back in California, how I never need to check the forecast. Blue skies, short sleeves every day, a breeze so slight it tickles. I feel like I just got out of prison, I say, and crack open my window and lower the radio so we can talk. I smell the familiar smell of Scarlet, coconut and mango from her lotion, and something unidentified and peppery. For reals. I guess if you define prison as living in a huge freaking mansion in Beverly Hills, and having a maid and a personal chef, then sure, you're totally out of prison, Scarlet says. And I can't decide if I hear a hint of something new in her voice, a lack of patience with me. First of all, I don't live in Beverly Hills. You know it's not like that. Relax, I'm joking, she says, and fiddles with the radio. Not as loud as before, but still annoying. So what do you want to do while you're here?
Honestly, just hang out with you. Eat pizza. Talk. Laugh. I've missed, you know, us.
Yeah, it's funny. I didn't realize how much of our time we used to spend together until you left. She keeps her eyes trained on the road, and again, I can't tell if I'm being paranoid.
Is Scar mad at me for something?
Of course we used to spend all of our time together. That's what best friends do.
I love your hair. It looks really cool.
I needed a change, she says, and turns the radio way up again. Over pizza at DeLucci's, which at least is one thing that is as good as I remember it, I catch her up on everything in L.A. Tell her the whole story, from beginning to end. My figuring out SN is Caleb, Liam and Dree, even what Theo said about Ethan being a drug addict, which at first I'm scared to tell her because I want her to like him, even if they will never meet. But I tell her anyway, because I've never been able to censor with Scar. I ramble a bit. I'm nervous. The caffeine, probably. Had a cup of coffee on the plane. Black. A pathetic tribute to Ethan.
So, what should I do? I ask. Because Scar always knows what to do. She's one of those wise old people trapped in a young person's body. Her middle name is actually, I kid you not, Sage.
What do you mean? She asks and sucks on the lemon from her Diet Coke. Some guy broke up with his girlfriend and wants to ask you out. Sounds like a high-class problem.
Well,
I think you're kind of overthinking it all, Jay. She takes a moment to look me up and down, to see the ways in which I look different from 2 months ago, weighing and measuring the changes. My hair is longer because I haven't bothered to get it cut. And I'm a few pounds thinner, mostly because Rachel is not fond of carbs. Other than that, I look exactly the same.
Maybe it's just...
By the way, Adam is coming over later, and so is Dina. Scar interrupts me mid-sentence.
You're friends with Dina now?
She's not so bad.
Okay.
I bite my pizza, avoid her eyes. Scar knows I've always hated Dina. She tried to sabotage my friendship with Scar back when we were freshmen. Told her I was talking shit about her behind her back, when of course I wasn't. And she'd always make these comments to me that were jabs, disguised as jokes. Not elevating bullying to the art form that Jem has, but still on the mean girl spectrum.
You know, you're not the only one this has been hard on.
Scar puts down her Diet Coke, and it splashes onto her plate. She hasn't taken a single bite of pizza. I mean, I had to make all new friends, too. For a moment, I switch things around. Think about what it would have been like if Scar had been the one who took off, and I'd been the one left behind.
What it would have been like to start all over with the people we have known forever.
All of those people we had already chosen, for one reason or another, not to be friends with. Until now, it has never once occurred to me that my leaving happened to anyone but me.
I'm sorry. I didn't really think about it.
Yeah, no shit.
Scar!
I look into her eyes, try to gauge what's going on. Are we fighting? Scar and I have never fought. Our friendship isn't like that. We don't do that teenage girl moodiness or jockeying for positions. We've always just been each other's favorites. This is new. And the shock of it, Scar being angry with me, maybe even having moved on from our friendship, makes me ache with loneliness.
What's going on?
Her eyes fill, and so do mine. I wanted so badly to come home, to sit in this booth that we've sat in hundreds of times, to just relax for maybe the first time in months, and instead, now? Suddenly, I want to be anywhere but here.
No.
The truth is, I don't want to be anywhere at all, because wherever I go,
I still come with me. I'm stuck in this brain, in this body, in this ugly swamp of humanness.
How do I manage to screw everything up?
My first instinct is to IM SN, to unload, and tell him how badly it's all going here, how everything is flipped, how home doesn't even feel like home. But then I remember yesterday and how he wouldn't even drink a cup of coffee with me.
Nothing. Forget about it.
Scar busies herself with the pizza, scatters powdered cheese, red pepper, salt. Still doesn't take a bite.
Scar!
There is pleading in my voice. Let's start over. I don't have the energy to fight this one out.
No.
Energy is not the problem. Courage is. I can't bear the thought of us yelling at each other, dissecting each other's weaknesses, saying out loud the things those who love you the most are never supposed to say. Things like what she just implied. You only think about yourself. I can't bear the thought that we might not be friends in the aftermath of those kinds of words.
Let's just not talk about it, okay?
Scarlet bites into her lemon again, and a drop of bitter juice slides down her chin. I hand her a napkin.
Okay.
I finish off my two slices, but Scar just picks hers up, dressed and uneaten, and dumps them in the trash. Scarlet sits next to Adam on the couch, her legs dangled over his lap. Dina's brother Joe, who is a freshman at the local community college and as annoying as his sister, has brought a case of beer, perhaps the new price of admission to Scar's parents' basement, and Dina passes cans around even though they're warm. Adam's best friend Toby is here too, and though we've known each other since preschool, I'm not sure we've ever had an actual conversation. Everyone looks different but the same. Adam's face is clearer, Scar was right, and he seems less gangly and boyish, like it's not as ridiculous a proposition that he could be somebody's boyfriend, that Scar would choose to hook up with him. I picture Adam lifting weights he ordered from the internet in his basement, which is exactly like the one in my old house, linoleum-covered and low-ceilinged, and the perfect locale for that sort of self-conscious project. Dina seems older, too. But maybe it's just that she's standing straighter, her scoliosis less pronounced, and she keeps whispering things into Scar's ear and then laughing.
Okay, I get it, I want to say. You guys are besties now.
What's L.A. like? Adam asks,
and then the room turns its collective attention to me, and though just a minute ago I felt stuck on the outside, I suddenly feel too much like the center of attention. Talking about L.A. might make Scar even angrier at me, especially when the questions come from her. Boyfriend? Friend with benefits?
You know, I say and swig my beer. Sunny.
Scar says that you, like, live in a palace and shit,
Toby says, and clinks his beer against mine, as if my moving to L.A. was some sort of personal coup, like getting into my first-choice college.
Yeah, not really. I mean, it's a nice house, but it's not mine.
I miss it here. I try to catch Scar's eye. She's not looking at me, because she's too busy snuggling with Adam. I think about Rachel's house, the walls of windows that beg you to look outward. And then I look around this basement. Remember that we are underground.
She said that you go to, like, some fancy-ass private school, where all the kids are super rich and are followed by paparazzi.
Toby's voice surprises me. It's deeper than I imagined. I can hear his Chicago accent, which I've never thought of as an accent at all until right now. Is this what I sound like to everyone at Wood Valley? All low, growly does instead of does? I don't know. The kids are definitely different. All this time, did Scar think I was humble bragging whenever I described my plush new world? She and I have always spoken the same language. Surely she must have understood that I'd so much rather be here,
in this basement. Maybe not drinking warm beer with Dina and Adam and this strange crew, but eating popcorn and watching Netflix with her. That the stuff that makes Wood Valley sound interesting and cool is exactly what makes it so lonely. I'm not impressed by tall hedges and Kobe beef. I picture my new friends hanging in Chicago, wonder whether they could slip into my old life the way I've tried to slip into theirs. Despite their excessive coffee spending money and their after-school SAT tutors, and the fact that they've never set foot in a Goodwill, Dree and Agnes would happily help themselves to a can of Schlitz and chat about whether Scar would let her hair grow out again. Caleb could hang here, too, because he blends. Sort of. They'd all adapt. Ethan is the only one who I can't superimpose on this image, but maybe that's because I have trouble picturing Ethan anywhere but in his hideouts. He's more like me, I think, burdened with the realization that what goes on in his mind is somehow different from what goes on in everyone else's, even those closest to us. And how you can't think about that for too long, because that thought, the truth of our own isolation, is too much to bear. I'm drunk, and the warm beer sloshes sour in my stomach. Scar and Adam are in the laundry room, door closed, and it occurs to me, based on the sounds emitting from that general vicinity, that they are likely having sex, and probably not for the first time. Maybe she has told Dina all the details, and her new best friend was able to give her lots of tips, the pertinent information that seems incredibly complicated in the little internet porn I've seen. Not just the condom on the banana talk we got in sex ed, but the hows, and the whys, and the what feels goods that I don't yet know. Perhaps this is why Scarlett no longer wants to be my friend. Because I can't provide that kind of useful counsel. And because I use expressions like, useful counsel, when I'm drunk. Come to think of it, I don't want to be my friend either. Dina and Toby are kissing in the corner, in the L part of the Schwartz's couch, the exact location I fantasized about just a week ago, when moving back and sleeping down here seemed like the answer to all of my problems. Joe, who since I've left has had a tattoo of headphones inked around his neck, the stupidest tattoo ever, since technology will progress, and pretty soon that will be the equivalent of getting a tat of a rotary phone, keeps trying to talk to me, inching closer with each question. Of course he asks dumb ones like, have you seen Brad and Angelina? And can you sit on the letters of the Hollywood sign? I guess he assumes that we should get together by process of elimination, that I pick who I make out with via an uncomplicated algorithm of who happens to be left in a room. I take out my phone, and I can't help it. I message SN. Me. You awake? SN. I'm always at your service. How's Chicago? Me. Honestly? Effed up. SN. Question mark. Me. I just... First of all, I'm drunk. And there's this stupid guy who won't leave me alone. SN. For real? Are you okay? Should I call the police? Me. No, I didn't mean... No, he's fine. Just annoying. And Scar is mad at me, but I don't know why. Dina is her new best friend or something, and I just feel so... SN. Alone. Me. Alone. SN. I'm here. Me. But you're not. Not really. SN. I am. Me. You're not even there when I'm there. SN. Do you always get so existential when you're drunk? Me. You didn't even want to have coffee with me. It was just coffee. I am crying now. And it's this. My tears... Not my IMing or my pushing his hand off my leg that finally gets Joe to give up and move away. Second choice to hooking up with me is apparently playing games on his phone. I hear intermittent beeps. At least my tears are quiet. Everyone else is way too busy to notice. SN. What are you talking about? Me.
You know what I'm talking about.